The year is 1842, and Christopher Robertson, a poor young man living with his family on an island just north of Scotland, has been accused of stealing his father's small savings. The real culprit is his brother, who has just fled their small town. As Christopher chases his brother, we encounter a world in which there is a vast difference between the haves and the have-nots, and a cast of characters seeking opportunities for better lives. That, in a nutshell, is the basis for The Runaway's Gold, the debut novel by New Hampshire author Emily Christie Burak. She joins us now to talk about it. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to be here.
Let's start off with a reading. Can you read a bit from your book?
Sure. The first chapter takes place in New York City, September 29th, 1842. It's called The Forge. I'm apprenticed to Smithy Peter O'Reilly, first cousin of Billy Tweed, who happens to be the only person I know in the city of New York who was actually born here. Billy found me 5 months before, wandering, lost, and confused, when I first stumbled off the ship from Liverpool. The O'Reilly Forge shoes the horses for the city's high and mighty, and I wouldn't have the work if it wasn't for Billy. Its low ceiling and soot-coated walls on 8th Street and Broadway are near Washington Square, where I often wander at dusk, damp grass at me toes, trying not to forget the stark, wind-blown hills of me island home.
I wanted you to start with a little bit of Christopher Robertson's voice. He goes by those two different names because he's got the accent, and you write throughout this novel with his accent. I was wondering both about that accent and why you chose to tell his story, a boy's story back from the 19th century.
Well, the story is inspired by my ancestor, whose name was Robert Christie. So I had some fun playing with the name. And he came from the Shetland Islands way back when, a time in history when things were very, very tough. And so I decided to place the story at that time, but I want it to sound very authentic. It's written in first person. My narrator is Christopher Robertson. He was sort of educated and living in a place that was very remote. And so I wanted the voice to have the rhythm and feel of the Shetland language, which if you go to Shetland or you listen to someone speaking Shetland over the phone, it's very hard to understand. It's English, but it's very, intensely influenced by the Old Norse language of the Vikings. And the Scottish brogue is in there too. So I wanted to have that feel to the language, but I wanted it to be understandable to people that speak English here in America or Canada or other places where they'll be reading the book.
So the story, for me, kept coming back to ideas of class struggle. Christopher and his family are at the mercy of this smuggling giant, Marwick. And when Christopher flees, he falls in love with Mary, and the girl is his age. But, I mean, she's wealthy, so she's better nourished, so she's even taller than he is. Class difference seems to matter a lot here.
It does. There was a huge difference between people that were poor and lived on these crofts and the people that owned the land. And they were completely dependent on the people that were the merchants or that ran the smuggling ships or any of the banks or any of the operations in the Shetland Islands. They borrowed all the money that they needed to go fishing from these people. They had to buy goods from those people's stores, the merchant's store. So there wasn't any cash that went back and forth between them.
And I don't want to say this is a political book, but that does sound a lot like what some say economic conditions are like now for many Americans, not just in New Hampshire, but throughout the country.
Yeah, I think you could say that. But the more you study the period of time that I'm talking about, there's really no comparison. There were absolutely no social systems in place to help people. If your parents died and you were left on your own and you were sent from one family to another to basically be taken care of, you had no hospital. You had absolutely nothing. There weren't any food banks. You were pretty much on your own.
There's also quite a bit for those numismatists in the audience to enjoy about this book. You must have done some research about the coins of the day. The coin, of course, being a central object in this story.
Yeah. The pine tree shilling is a main object in this story. And I don't want to give too much of the story away, but it was just a very special early colonial piece. And I love the symbolic pine tree that's on it, and that meant a lot to everyone that was in the revolution, the war against Great Britain. So that was just a really cool piece that I wanted to put in. The gold ducats from the Netherlands were really special gold pieces that were used in trade in those days. And then I came upon another coin that turns out to be an important part of the story that was minted at the same time that my story takes place.
Would you say that was your biggest challenge in writing this book, the research, or was there something else that you found challenging?
I think that self-confidence was the biggest challenge for
me.
Yeah, to share it with other people. I have written two other books in the past that I just never dared show other people. So this one was one where I just started to, I needed to get over the big hurdle of facing rejection, facing other people's opinions. Writing is so personal.
Sure.
And I think it's just, that's a big thing that a lot of people can't get over. And I think sometimes they wish they were writers and they just can't quite keep going and face those kind of things. But so I think that was my biggest challenge, actually. I thought the writing and the research was so much fun and not, it was just a joy.
I mean, did you feel like people wouldn't think that you were or could be an authority on what a young boy back in the 19th century would say or think? Was that a concern?
I don't know. I'm not so wasn't so concerned about that. I think it was more of, I think writers that love to read other really great writers, when they're writing, they have this voice in the back of their head thinking, well, that was a really bad sentence, or, you know, that doesn't sound great, or I could never be in that category. I think it was more fighting those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Emily Christie Burak, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much, Peter.
Emily Christie Burak is the author of The Runaway's Gold, and she will appear tonight at Gibson's Books in Concord for the official launch. That's tonight at 7:00.